This is the Malloy program. Thanks for tuning in. Big story today, of course, is the Obama speech as he accepted the Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo, Norway. I've got some thoughts on that, and so do a lot of people that whose thoughts were going, not a lot, but several that we're going to incorporate into the program tonight. But one of the things that's very irritating to me is the criticism of his receiving this prize from Republicans, because I think we all know that Republicans want war, they want death, they want destruction. They also want to see the economy collapse. This is their ticket back. If there's war, if there's dissatisfaction, if there is a sinking economy like there is, this is what Republican office holders live for. Republican voters are just screwy as hell because they go ahead and vote for these candidates and then they get more of the same. But anyway, for the Republicans to criticize Obama for receiving the Nobel Peace Prize is very telling, because first of all, they would criticize if all of a sudden he threw open his arms and showed the nail holes in his hands and the wound in his side and the scars left on his forehead from the crown of thorns, they would still insist that he was born in Kenya. They would still insist that he's not a legitimate president, even if he said, "Forgive them, my father, for they know not what they do." You know, and then all of a sudden the heavens opened and the first one to go would be Sarah Palin. They still would say he was born in Kenya and didn't deserve to be president. Republicans feast on death. That's what they're about. They feast on death, disorder, decay, chaos. This is what the Republican Party is all about. So to hear the criticism, because the Nobel Peace Committee, or the Nobel Committee, you know, Obama didn't nominate himself. You know, he just, I think he's a little bit, you know, questioning, like, what? The what? I won the what? So we're going to play one little one-minute clip from his acceptance speech in Norway, where he acknowledges the obvious of a war, of someone who has just committed more troops to war, receiving a peace prize. I think probably most rational people, forget Republicans, they're Republican rank and file, have their heads so far up their asses they can't even breathe anymore. And Republican office holders are totally irrelevant except where it concerns destruction. So let's set them aside. I think most people, average people, like you and me, we're average, aren't we? Sure we are. We remember previous Nobel Peace Prize recipients. One of the most infamous, as far as I'm concerned, was Henry Kissinger. Remember, I know a lot of you are too young to remember this, but Henry Kissinger and Lê Duc Tho, who was the negotiator for the North Vietnamese, trying to come to a peace agreement. At least I think the Vietnamese were. Kissinger was not. Kissinger and Nixon and the whole U.S. foreign policy establishment back there were no more interested in peace than they were interested in a seriously developing sexually transmitted disease. They they're Republicans. They don't want peace. Keep in mind what I said a second ago. But when the Nobel Peace Committee awarded their prize jointly to Lê Duc Tho and Henry Kissinger, those of us who witnessed that back in, when was it, 68, 69, 70, whenever it was, I forget. But it was just 71, 70, I don't know. I mean, we just fell over dead. Everybody that I knew and I was involved in across the country, and people I did know, you know, the whole peace movement, the whole anti-war movement, we all fell over dead. We died that day. We just fell over dead. We were smitten. The hand of the Lord did smite us, and we fell down grievously wounded and dead. How do we come back to life? I don't know. Maybe we're still dead. I have no idea. When that occurred, of course, nobody said anything. Nobody, you didn't hear, Democrats screaming and frothing and blood coming out of their mouths the way you hear Republicans now talking about Barack Obama. And regardless of how much one dislikes Obama, and I have come to the conclusion, I don't dislike him, I don't know him, but regardless of what you feel about his policies, again, he didn't, the contrast, and I'm going to get to this in a second in email, the contrast between George W. Bush and him, is stark. It's stunning. It's I don't know, north and south, east and west, whatever. But I will remember, for some reason, that year when Henry Kissinger and Lê Duc Tho were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. I may not remember the number of the year, but I remember just thinking, what in the F is going on? This was at a time when they were still arguing over the configuration of the table around which they would all sit. Well, if you know anything about that war, you know what followed that war, or I mean followed that peace prize and the meeting between Lê Duc Tho and Kissinger was another, I don't know what, 30,000 dead Americans, another 1.5 million dead Vietnamese. So, but again, you know, the blood did not shoot out of the eyes of Democrats when Henry Kissinger got that award, as blood is shooting out of the eyes of these demonic Republicans with the award to Obama. Very interesting letter here from Epi 10. Subject line is, "Give me another drink, bartender." You know, when you get an email with a subject line like that, you, uh-oh. He writes, "Mike, well, religion has now officially killed health care. Do you believe this, blank? This is year 2009. Can you believe this effing blank? What's next, the atmosphere? Yep, the religious morons have obstructed progress on that front, too. We should have been doing the hard work of stabilizing the man-made effects of global warming for at least the past 20 years, but because of religion and religion alone, our best scientific minds couldn't do anything except to warn us. Carl Sagan once said that had it not been for the repression of science due to religion back in the so-called Dark Ages, we likely today would be a space-faring species. But that didn't happen because we allowed religion to exist, and not only allowed it to exist, but as a society encouraged people to believe in fairy tales, and still today, these same insane relics of the past are given a place at the discussion table. In fact, all but a few at the discussion table are insane." No, I take that back. They're all insane. "And there's no end to this madness in sight. Yeah, I'm a pessimist and a realist. Religion poisons everything," Epi 10 writes. "Hitchens, Christopher Hitchens was exactly right with this statement. The only correction I would make is to say effing religion poisons everything." Epi was pissed off when he wrote this. "Is there a deeper emotion than hate, Malloy? You're an expert on this. Maybe apathy? I still care. I don't know why I still care, but I do. I'm tired of feeling hate, but as long as religion exists on this planet, I will have to live with the hatred I feel and hate that, too. I hate these religious MFers more than I can even understand, and it adversely affects every relationship I have with humans. Admittedly, I'm not a people person, but can you blame me? This effing planet is insane." Well, anyway, about Obama, I hate to say I told you so, but you knew it, too. You knew he was a corporate hack because you said as much back when Kucinich, our only real hope, was still in the running. But you have to keep some semblance of sanity on your radio show, so I understand your need for optimism. We liberals and leftists weren't wrong about him, Malloy. He's just another conservative hack hell-bent on being a, quote, victorious, end quote, leader in the history books. History will, I'm afraid, not be kind to Obama. The bar is now so low that all I have left that's positive to say about Obama is that, quote, at least he's not Bush, end quote. And that is indeed pathetic. Blank this blank. Where's my blanking guitar? Epi 10. Come on, this train.
Someday it's going to come. Someday. Someday.
Someday it's going to come.
I've been crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss?
Isekaya.
Peace train sounding lighter, glide on the peace train. Come on, peace train. Someday it's going to.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey-free zone.
It is 21 past the hour. Before we get to the phony stuff, and that is the politics, global politics, American politics, war, death, destruction, none of that is authentic. It's all phony. It has implications in the real world, but it's all phony stuff. You want some real stuff? That thing that appeared over, was it Norway the other night? I found this little piece today that said UFO watchers around the world are buzzing after that video footage, emerged of what they believe, the UFO watchers, they believe is the, strongest proof yet that we're not alone in the universe. It goes on to say that thousands of people got in touch with Norway's Meteorological Institute with reports of that spiraling blue light that appeared in the sky above Trøndelag, Norway, around 8:45 a.m. That was 8:45 a.m. It's pretty dark there. Well, it is, you know, we're getting up on the winter solstice holiday here, so yeah. The light, if you've seen the video, it's obviously, it's like a giant blue cartwheel just spiraling around and around this bright object. And at one stage, it appeared to be anchored to the ground with a triangular blue beam. Somebody's trying to say, oh, yeah, well, that was a Russian missile practice. Oh, come on. Oh, for Christ's sake. The light then exploded into a ring of white fire, according to a British newspaper, prompting true believers on forums around the world to declare the moment a first contact. An observer from northern Norway told the UK's Sun, quote, it looked like a rocket that spun round and round. Well, if you've seen it, you don't need any descriptions from other people. You can look at the video. No one has come forward to explain the phenomenon as a hoax that I'm aware of, nor have any scientists or military experts been able to explain what the hell it was. Now, one theory is that it may have been a light show laser projected onto low clouds. Right. Or it could be swamp gas. Or it could be, I don't know. But the timing of this thing, where it concerns what time of early morning it was, and the large scale of the display makes that kind of unlikely. Stargate fans claim it's a UFO entering the Earth's atmosphere through a wormhole and say it explains how UFOs seemingly appear and disappear at random in our skies. One of the most popular conspiracy theories links the phenomenon to the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland, and rumors of a, quote, black hole project, end quote, underway at that giant atom smasher. The Norwegian Space Center chief scientist, Erik Tandberg, told The Sun he agreed with many experts who believe it may have been a missile test from Russia, although Russia quickly denied any testing. The expert in Norway said, quote, I agree with everyone in the science community that this light was the weirdest thing. I've never seen anything like this ever. He went on to say, The spiral suggests the object came off course in balance and entered the spiral movement. Leaking rocket fuel could account for the blue light. And then he added, but I know that the military have denied this explanation. So, we could be looking at an entirely new natural phenomenon. That's according to the Norwegian Space Center chief scientist Erik Tandberg. An entirely new natural phenomenon. I saw the video just like you probably have by now, too. And that's not a laser show. You know, it's just not.
So what do you think it is?
What do I think it is? What do I think it is? Can I just cop out and say I don't know? You ask me what I think it is.
Well, there won't be any points given or subtracted for incorrect answers. I was just curious what you thought that little spinning thing was. Did you think we were being contacted by an alien life form? I'm just curious because I need to call, you know, Alex Jones's show and let them know whether or not she'll be making an appearance.
You are a real hard-ass realist, aren't you? I mean, you just...
There is no mystery in life to me. No, that was some sort of man-made spacecraft. It was probably the freaking balloon boy people. You know, they're out there. They gave up on a reality show in this country, and they're like, okay, we got a new one.
I don't know how you and I have managed to survive for 15 years.
Unbelievable. But Molly would say, well, it's the Jesus star.
It's time
for Christmas.
I explained solstice to her tonight.
It's the Jesus. She doesn't get daddy. It's the Jesus star.
Well, I explained to her because we were singing Deck the Halls, and you know, she had a little curious look on her face, like, what's this got to do with a manger? And I finally explained to her, she's only five, but I think she got it, that Deck the Halls is a pagan song and about, you know, yada yada. What do I think it is? I think it's somebody desperately from a different star system trying to contact us and just help us out of the mess, or just find out who we are. First of all, see if we're edible.
Tell me what you say. If you could talk to me, what news would you bring of voices in the sky? Voices in the sky.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Yeah, I know. The Russians have taken responsibility. They've confirmed that the light show was the latest test firing of a new intercontinental ballistic missile. Who do you suppose that's aimed at?
Doesn't that make you feel much better?
Yeah. It was launched by a submarine, the Dmitry Donskoy, in the White Sea early Wednesday, according to Russian newspapers. Russian defense analyst Pavel Felgenhauer said the images seen over Norway were consistent with a missile failure. He said, quote, such lights and clouds appear from time to time when a missile fails in the upper layers of the atmosphere, and sites like this have been reported before. Well, what that means to me, it was the Russians' turn to take responsibility. You know, sometimes we take responsibility. Sometimes the British take responsibility. It was the Russians' turn this time, because God forbid that anybody figure out what's really going on. And what's really going on, Mike? Well, what's really going on is, theoretical physicists, people like Stephen Hawking, Einstein, are absolutely correct. The time-space travel and time and space actually are the same thing. So travel from there to here is just a matter of finding the right
route to do it. Carl Sagan's book, Contact, when it was made into a movie, was very clear on how you do that. Right? Of course. What, you don't believe that, do you? But you'll believe that some talking snake in a garden someplace, a few thousand years ago, convinced a woman thing to eat an apple, and therefore poison and death and destruction leapt out on the planet. What else have we got? Steve writes in, I got some really weird emails today. Not weird in a bad sense, but just, you know. Steve writes in, Mike, I'm checking the score, and it looks like the Republicans are still in power. Why? Because no one in the majority party is getting anything truly done. I'm so done with the Democrats. They have proven to be a bunch of worthless, selfish idiots that are not willing to fight for the people who got them in there in the first place. And now I'm exhausted trying to reason. Trying to reason out the deal as to why I voted for them ever. Stop the wars? No. Pass single-payer health care plan? No. Help the poor and middle class first? No. Stop the corporations from raping and pillaging the population? Hell no. Because they're collecting checks from them. Change that we can believe in? This is not what I voted for. I feel conned. And there's nothing different between Barack Obama and W, aside from the fact that the current president can make getting screwed a little easier to tolerate. He'll leave a mint on the pillow afterwards, like Clinton did. I never thought the new face of fascism would look like me. Continue the scream, Steve. And then our friend Dr. Sachs, who is a musician with the Count Basie Orchestra and writes in every once in a while. He wrote in today, Mike, my lady said that your emailers have such good punctuation and grammar, you never have to correct them. I'm going to have to pay more attention. I type fast and sometimes don't even read it. You were spot on about the healthcare failure the other night. What a drag. Anyway, I was getting into trouble on Facebook again today. Someone said Obama looked sad in Oslo. And then another said he was sad because he knew he didn't deserve the Nobel Peace Prize. So I tossed in another perspective to the mix. Here it is. This one on his Facebook, Dr. Sachs's Facebook page. You know, the man didn't nominate himself, and his winning reflects well on the United States. So it seems to me to say that our president didn't deserve it really is interesting. I think the fact that he inherited a mess, an imploding economy that experts said was headed toward another Great Depression, which we've avoided so far, rising unemployment, two wars, unresolved prisoner combatant problems, threats of terrorism, burgeoning health care problems, debt from the past administration, and now a decision he made to send 30,000 troops. Do you expect the man to be up there dancing an effing jig and smiling about all that blank? You know, my mom took us to marches so we could get the right to vote, because all over the country 40 years ago, some blacks could not vote and lived in such segregated conditions. My mom and dad moved us into that upper middle class neighborhood in 1964, it had the third largest per capita income in the U.S. that year, where we were the first black family to live there. And they did it for two reasons. For better schools, and they thought at the time that integration would break down the barriers. I was 5 years old. 40 years after Martin's I Have a Dream speech, a black man had the courage, please don't say he's half white, a black man had the courage to run for president, travel the country, and we elected him. He will go down in history as a people coming from slavery to be president. That alone, the world is saying, deserves a prize. If you think it was easy, let me tell you how uncomfortable I feel still today, just walking into certain diners across much of the United States. I'm giving the cat an Oscar, a Grammy, and a Nobel. Dr. Sachs. And the parenthetical, he says, please don't say he's half white. I have majority white blood from slave grandfathers in me. And no one asked me if I was mixed, and women still clutch their purse when they see me. Happened today. Lady was nervous because I was behind her, walking the same direction. She actually stopped and pretended to go another way. As I hit the remote for my shiny white Honda coupe, I guess she didn't see the white blood in me. Huh. Dr. Sachs, who travels around the world and creates music and sends me an email every once in a while. Thanks, Dr. Sachs. Michael in Roswell, regarding the Peace Prize speech, Michael writes, unfortunately, he now is Bush. In that speech, he used Bush's self-referential and self-aggrandizing term, quote, war president, end quote, to describe himself. Mike, I don't think reading 1984 was enough. Obama's speech could be read as war is peace. It's time to read Orwell's essay, Politics in the English Language. Sigh, Mike. Play that soundbite for me, Kathy, if you would. This is about a minute long. Oh, and by the way, why is Newt Gingrich, or I should say, why are Newt Gingrich and Sarah Palin, why are news media reporting anything Sarah Palin says or does? What's next? We're going to know every time she goes to the bathroom? What is this craziness? Why are media in this country making something out of this half-wit? I'm sorry. Both Sarah Palin and Newt Gingrich said they thought the speech was good. Here's a one-minute clip from it.
The commander-in-chief of a military, of a nation, in the midst of two wars. One of these wars is winding down. The other is a conflict that America did not seek, one in which we are joined by 42 other countries, including Norway, in an effort to defend ourselves and all nations from further attacks. Still, we are at war. I'm responsible for the deployment of thousands of young Americans to battle in a distant land. Some will kill, and some will be killed. And so I come here with an acute sense of the costs of armed conflict, filled with difficult questions about the relationship between war and peace and our effort to replace one with the other.
Well, you know, the quickest way to have done that, insofar as our involvement in what is, I don't know, what do you call the killing and the madness that goes on in Afghanistan? If we were to remove the Soviet Union, remove the United States, remove the British Empire, remove Alexander the Great, remove Genghis Khan, if we're to pull everybody back, what would that be called? I guess it would be called an ongoing familial or family, tribal, whatever you want to call it, conflict in a country that is, I don't think, ever going to be anything other than what it is. It's been that way for thousands of years, I guess, or hundreds, thousands, millennia, I don't know. Sure, they have Toyota pickup trucks now, but so they have Kalashnikovs, so they have shoulder-fired missiles, thanks to us. But sans the presence of all these foreign powers, what is Afghanistan? Is it a country that is constantly in some form of conflict? They're crazy because they're religious fundamentalists, so obviously they're going to suppress females because they subscribe to the same nonsense that the Jews and the Christians do, where it concerns woman being the bringer of death and sickness and sadness and depression and disease. I mean, they all share that. All three religions share that whole thing, that creation myth. So, you know, and the families of the tribal people in that country go back. I'm sure they trace their family history back back to the point where they were chiseling stuff in stone. I mean, come on. This is not the United States. This is not Great Britain. This is a civilization, a tribal civilization that's...
Renegade Talk Radio, done right.
from the left, it's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, now if we could just get our cues right so I wasn't talking when we started playing commercials. Sorry about that. 10 before the hour. What was I saying before I was really interrupted by people who pay for the program? about Afghanistan. Were it not for the presence of foreign invaders, what would the country look like? It would look like today, like it did all those years ago, except they now would have Toyota trucks and shoulder-fired missile launchers and so on and so forth. We have no business being there. I think we all understand that. We do have some business trying to settle the differences in the Middle East that foments foments terrorism and exports it. That seems to me to be where the focus should be, on finding some kind of a settlement where it concerns the Israelis and the Palestinians, some sort of peace negotiations between Shia and Sunni, some way to convince the Muslim world that the Christian world, at least that's how they perceive us, is not interested in continuing the Crusades from 1,800 years ago or 1,500 years ago, and that, you know, okay, Muhammad's cool, Jesus is cool, Allah is cool, let's everybody just, you know, stop this. Doesn't that seem to be, it seems to me, but then, you know, I'm a throwback, I am a moss-backed liberal who still believes this nonsense, you know, that the solutions are very simple. If people just stop screaming at each other and sit down and talk, you know, lower your missile launchers, lower your guns, you know, stop sending Blackwater agents into other countries to blow people up and kill people, and then everybody stand around picking boogers out of their nose saying, well, that must have been terrorists. Oh, man. But anyway, wouldn't it have been cool if if Obama just would have said, I'm here to accept the Nobel Peace Prize, and as a recipient of this prize, I got to do something for peace, so I'm going to declare a complete withdrawal of all U.S. troops from Afghanistan, Iraq, Germany, Korea, Japan, the U.K., Central America, wherever troops are. And Oh, that's crazy talk? Okay, I'm sorry. Andy in Seattle writes, Mike, Obama actually said in his speech today, quote, we will not eradicate violent conflict in our lifetimes, end quote. And we all know that he isn't going to be putting a whole lot of effort in even trying at this point. When can we get off this roller coaster ride to hell? Andy in Seattle. Never. You know, war and death and destruction is obviously... Well, I guess it's obvious. Genetic has something to do with competition for space and food and females. All right, everybody, you can back off now with the criticisms about my take on lights in the sky. Ward in Japan writes, subject line, UFO, get a grip. Mike, I grew up in Southern California within 60 miles of Vandenberg Air Force Base where many missiles were launched. They often resulted in UFO calls. Do a search. Google images, Vandenberg missile launch. Take a look. Ward in Japan. Jeff in Valencia, California writes, Mike, let us get real. Kathy's 100% on target. Back in the 70s, I was wrangling horses, a bunch of rich bastards down in the southeastern corner of Arizona. On the Sharps cattle outfit. Thousands of acres. We all settled in, sitting around the campfire, BSing, and suddenly on the western sky was something that scared the blank out of all of us. It was a Vandenberg base in California missile delivering a satellite. The shock waves deliver the same odd appearance in the sky as in the Norway case. This object, whatever the hell it was, apparently in my opinion, was being fired directly away from the viewers, whereas the California missile firing at Vandenberg went right to left in the western sky. Jesus, man, that lit up the entire sky as it climbed toward the outer atmosphere. My brother works at Vandenberg and has invited me to watch the latest missile firing, and I've had a cold and refused to drive north. And then he writes in boldface, told you, Mike, I just heard you say the Russians take credit, failed missile firing. We are alone, Jeff writes, in the cosmos, and that really scares the blank out of us, especially the sky spook Jesus freaks. As for contact, you and I will never see that.
and what civilized culture would even want to approach us dangerous psychopaths. Yeah, the little blue planet is beautiful from a distance in space, but it's populated with apes. Jeff in Valencia, California. Gosh, you people are just so cynical. I don't know. How did I ever acquire such a cynical audience? Oh, my. It's almost time to get out of here for this particular segment. When we come back, I just want to talk a little bit about Obama's speech. Tony in Maine writes, wanted to lend a theory as to what we saw in the skies over Norway. I think what that was is the beginning of a polar shift, something called pole reverse. Reverse of it has something to do with the realignment of the galaxy. Not sure if you're aware of Edgar Cayce.
Oh, yeah.
But he predicted some 70 years ago that the Earth will experience a pole reversal that will coincide with Mayan prediction of 2012. I know it sounds kind of offbeat, but does it sound any more offbeat than the explanation we're getting from various governments? I've included a clip from YouTube. Don't mind the source. I couldn't find the video I really wanted to show. But I'd been reading up on Cayce earlier this year, and I recall a photo that looked very much like the blue spiral light that appeared the other night. So just check out the video, and you will see the same kind of spiral. So who knows? Maybe Cayce was right. And this pole reversal phenomenon could be the beginning of the end of the way we live our lives. And get the hell out of the South, because if this does happen, the South will be underwater. Tony in Maine. Yeah, I'm familiar with Edgar Cayce, and yes, I'm familiar with pole reversal. It's happened several times.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
All right, 21 past the hour. Coming up after this break, we have a missive from Bob Alexander. He doesn't write moments anymore. Remember, he used to have a moment with Bob. Well, he wrote the last one, and this one he calls a call to action. I don't know what the difference is, but we're going to share it with you because it's pretty good. It's about food. That's right. So stick around. That comes up after the next break. All right. Where are we? We're right here. Chris is in Nanaimo, British Columbia. Nanaimo, is that how you say it?
Nanaimo, actually.
Nanaimo, hi.
Hi there. I just wanted to comment on the Medicare being dropped instead of the Medicaid being risen. If you drop Medicare, it means all the people who voted Republicans, the Reagan Democrats and all that, all of them get free health care, and I can't see that as being just. But if you raise the Medicaid rate to, say, $90,000, you can let the rich snobs who put us in this position to begin with pay the rates, the profits of the insurance industry. You know, just as a way of getting back at people who deserve it.
Well, you're probably right. But making Medicare available to people at age 55, it's not free. As a matter of fact, it's going to cost them about $7,000 a year.
Well, Medicaid, I'm not too sure how that system works.
No, I'm talking about Medicare. Medicaid is essentially free. That's the bottom of the safety net in this country where it concerns health care or paying for health care. I had a brother who died with metastasized colon cancer, and he had Medicaid. That's all he had. And I can tell you that the treatment he got was pretty crappy. Because Medicaid, if I understand it right, it pays very little for things like the chemotherapy infusions, and you're kind of at the mercy of these labs that are not labs, but treatment centers that are set up where, you know, there'll be 12 people sitting there getting poison dripped into their veins. So, I've got some strong feelings about that, but I think Medicaid, I guess for some people, it is a safety net. It is the bottom net in this safety net. It stops people from being just completely on their own where it concerns health care. But there are qualifications that you have to go through and hoops you have to jump to even get included in that. You know, it ought to be, in this country, it ought to be single-payer health care with provisions for people who are unemployed or can't work or what have you, where they get the same kind of, everybody gets the same treatment. And if it takes government subsidies, so be it. You know, take a couple of billion or trillion away from making war on people in Afghanistan and Iraq and use that to pay for it. But we'll never do that because we are a hate-consumed nation. We want to get out there and steal from everybody and beat them up. Hello?
Well, I was just thinking in terms of a single-payer system, doing a single-payer system like Medicare that you have to pay into in order to get something out of versus Medicaid that you don't, that's just paid through taxes. If you're really going for a, not a socialized medicine, but an actual single-payer system, you do it through the Medicaid. Now, yes, you're talking about a lack of care through Medicaid because of the differences in pay scales, but those could be reformed by just simply saying, set at the same rate as Medicare. I mean, that's a later reform, but if you want foot in the door, single payer, Medicaid would be a lot faster way of doing it than Medicare. Medicare also has that obligation that, you know, if you're and have no money, you still have to pay.
Yeah, well, you may be right, Chris. It gets very confusing for me. But what difference if you call it Medicare or Medicaid or a can of tuna? I mean, what difference does it make? I guess in being able to sell it to the Congress or to I don't know anymore. It's hard for me to get involved in that discussion, even think about that discussion that I hear on the news, or I see these politicians, these Democrats come out and talk about this nonsense. I hear Obama talk about it and it's driving me crazy because there was a very simple solution. That's single payer. It's not government health care. It's not government-run health care. It's government-financed health care, and there's a big difference. But we're not going to do that in this country because there's too much money to be made off of sickness and deep, deep, deep fear and illness and so on and so forth. So as long as that's a profit center, it's going to remain a profit center.
The only other option you have available is to literally conscript everyone, give them all VA benefits, and then discharge everybody from the Army something.
Well, that is a little tricky. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. That's a good idea. Just put everybody in the military, and then they have veterans benefits. Oh, I think that would get some resistance. I don't know why this has to be so complicated. I do. It is so complicated because the two-thirds of the U.S. government are on the payroll of several industries, one of which is the health insurance industry. We know that. You know, we all know that. Even the dumbasses that watch Fox, I guess they know. Well, they probably don't know anything. But since most rational people or people with at least an IQ of 101, they know that. They know that the healthcare industry, among others, controls every single elected official. Because it's their money that put these members of the House and Senate and the executive branch into business. It's their money. And since it's their money, they get to call what the plays are. You know, it's sending in plays from the sidelines, and God help the quarterback that says, oh, wait a minute, I think I want to do something different. Oh, no, you don't. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Molloy.
Mike Molloy.
25 before the hour. All right, we don't have any music for a call to action. I guess we could have blaring trumpets. We could have a fanfare, but we didn't prepare for it. So a call to action from Bob Alexander, who writes, Ronald Reagan was right. Uh-oh. Anytime you see something that starts out that way, Ronald Reagan was right, or to be more precise, his corporate speechwriters were absolutely correct when they wrote this line for him to recite. Government is not the solution to our problems, Mommy. Government is the problem. Of course, that statement wasn't true when he read it from his script, but it is today. In the 28 years since Ronald Reagan became the top spokesman for corporate America, the government of the United States has become a wholly owned subsidiary of the corporatocracy. Our government does the bidding of the highest bidder. We, the people, just don't have enough cash to make our elected representatives represent us. Our decline into corporatism accelerated when we realized how powerless we were to affect change. The more we understood we couldn't stop the corporate wars, we couldn't demand decent, affordable health care, we couldn't even insist that our elected leaders be held accountable for crimes they committed against humanity, the more we stopped participating in the process of government, which is one of the goals of the corporatocracy. They achieve their aims faster if we are demoralized, disenfranchised, and disinterested. If voter turnout is an accurate measure of determining the sentiment of the people, over one-third of us didn't bother to vote in the 2008 election. Worldwide, we rank third from the bottom in our voter turnout. And why should we vote anyway? The difference between the two corporate candidates is largely cosmetic. Both political parties represent corporate interests, not ours. We have yet to see the change we can believe in. Studies using game theory, which takes into account the ability of voters to interact, have found that the expected turnout for any large election should be zero. So in this arena, the corporatocracy has won. And we know the conditions will not stay the same. They don't get better by themselves. It will only get worse. It doesn't help that we're Americans. The French brought their country to a standstill with a national strike over the way their government attempted to reform the pension system. We're not capable of doing that. I don't know why. It's not that we need instant gratification. It's just very difficult for most of us to do anything if we can't see any discernible change within a short period of time. We've been at war for over 8 years in Afghanistan. Regardless of the protests, the marches, the letters, we will be at war for years into the future. It's impossible to measure if we're making any difference at all. But there is still a reason why we shouldn't all stand in line for a cup of Jim Jones Flavor Aid. There is a reason to still have hope. We don't need a national strike. We don't have to bus in by the thousands and march on Washington. We don't have to make one sign or banner. And we can still prevail. All we have to do is stop eating poison. And we will literally transform the world within 10 years, tops. I realize that right about now you might think it's time for the men in white coats to come scoop me up in one of their industrial-sized butterfly nets. But give me a couple minutes more here. First, go rent, beg, borrow, or steal a copy of the documentary, Food Incorporated. In the 93 minutes that it runs, you'll find out that our food industrial complex is out to kill us. You'll see how a handful of corporations control our nation's food supply. Though the companies try to maintain the myth that our food still comes from farms with red barns and white picket fences, our food is actually raised on massive factory farms and processed in mega industrial plants. The current method of raw food production is largely a response to the growth of the fast food industry since the 1950s. The way we eat has changed more in the last 50 years than in the previous 10,000. And these changes are making us sick. Because of the high proliferation of processed foods derived from corn, Americans are facing alarming increases in obesity, especially among children. One in three Americans born after 2000 will contract early onset diabetes. Among minorities, the rate will be one in two. 70% of processed foods today have genetically modified ingredients. Cattle given feed that their bodies are not biologically designed to digest result in new strains of E. coli bacteria, which sickens roughly 73,000 Americans annually. In 1998, the USDA implemented microbial testing for salmonella and E. coli so that if a plant repeatedly failed these tests, a factory, the USDA could shut down that factory. After being taken to court by the Meat and Poultry Associations, the USDA no longer has that power.
According to Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation, quote, there is this deliberate veil, this curtain that's drawn between us and where our food is coming from. The industry doesn't want you to know the truth about what you're eating, because if you knew, you might not want to eat it, end quote. Food Inc. shows us how the food industrial complex came into being and how it uses political power to stay in power. And after watching the film, you'll understand that this is one war we can win. Go to foodincmovie.com. That's food, I-N-C, movie. Foodincmovie.com. And learn 10 simple things that we can do to change the food system. Did you get that? Food, Inc., movie. Foodincmovie.com. It's all about the money, Bob writes, and the ability to measure progress. Assume a family of three spends about $600 a month on food. By not giving the money to the food industrial complex, that $7,200 a year that isn't going to Monsanto or Tyson Chicken or any other company that peddles poison, that loss of market share makes corporations pay attention. Organic foods start showing up in Walmart. It's happening now. And because of that, tons of pesticides, herbicides, and chemical fertilizers aren't going into the system. For every fast food burger we don't buy, or any organic food we do buy, makes a real difference. According to Gary Hirschberg, the founder of Stonyfield Farm, quote, the irony is that the average consumer does not feel very powerful. He or she thinks that he or she is the recipient of whatever industry has put there for them to consume. Trust me, it's the exact opposite. Those businesses spend billions of dollars to tally our votes. When we run an item past the supermarket scanner, we're voting. In this, end quote, in this one arena, we have the power to finally make the corporatocracy adapt to our demands. So often we've had to adapt to what they force upon us. Please watch Food Inc. Go to foodincmovie.com and see how we literally can change the world one bite at a time. And unless the President and Congress attempt a Food Reformation Act, where we're all mandated to buy crappy food, I think we have a shot at it. Joe Salatin, owner and farmer of Polyface Farms, said, quote, imagine what it would be if, as a national policy, we said we would be only successful if we had fewer people going to the hospital next year than last year. The idea then would be to have such nutritionally dense, unadulterated food that people who ate it actually felt better, had more energy, and weren't sick as much. Now see, that's a noble goal. End quote. Call to action there from Bob. Yeah, Walmart has begun selling organic food. I think following in the steps of that behemoth, I believe Target is too. Now, definitions come into play here. I don't know if the USDA or the Food and Drug Administration, whoever is supposed to determine the definition of organic or natural or whatever, I don't know how they define the word. It's easy enough to find out. Never mind. It would not be easy at all. It'd be very difficult. But we try here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains to get as much organic food as possible when it's available. And obviously right now it's not locally grown and organic. You know, where you actually go out someplace and you see the chickens out there eating bugs off the ground and scratch around in the dirt for whatever the hell it is they eat. But they look like happy chickens. You know, then when you wring their necks and defeather them and put them in a bag and sell them, at least you know you're getting, if that's your thing, you know you're getting a natural chicken. Have you seen those videos of chickens? And we have them here in Georgia. Oh, my God. In North Georgia? I think Georgia is the number one chicken-producing state in America. These long chicken houses? Every time I go by, well, I'm not trying to demean anybody here, but it reminds me of a death camp. There they are. And you cannot travel the interstates of around Metro Atlanta without seeing those great big, outside of Metro Atlanta,
without seeing those great big trucks with, you know, I don't know, a thousand cages on it with about 20 chickens jammed into each cage. And they're on their way to, I'm laughing, and they're on their way to a Tyson slaughterhouse where, you know, undocumented workers work. And I'm waiting for the time that somebody shows up on the local news here and says, well, you know, I bought these chicken wings and I found a thumb in there. And the skin on the thumb is kind of brown, so I guess it's Mexican. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
For a liberal helping of truth, it's More Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Doug is in Orlando, listening on XM. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Mike. I live up in Atlanta. As far as this whole healthcare reform thing goes, I don't think that you can mandate someone to buy a product that they're not buying as part of the Congress's power to regulate commerce. There's no commerce if I'm not buying something, so I don't see how the government can force me to buy a product that I'm not buying now. I mean, if they could do this, then they can force people to take vacations to Disneyland.
Well, but on a state level, you're already forced to buy car insurance if you want to.
That's a different constitution. That's a state constitution. I'm talking about the powers of the Congress are defined in Article 1
but,
of the state of constitution.
Yeah, well, I understand, and I'm not trying to be argumentative here, but if the states were doing something in violation of the U.S. Constitution, the Supreme Court would have said something a long time ago. I don't get it either. I mean, I really don't, but apparently there is a legal there's a legal avenue down which the government can order, any government, the state, the federal, can order people to buy insurance if they want to drive. That's the trade-off.
That's a trap, an option. You can choose not to drive. And I think the difference there is that the state has the power to regulate activities to its own constitution because ours is a federal system. There are powers that the state has that are reserved to it under the famous constitution that are not reserved to the federal.
Congress. Let me ask you this: Do you think? And I'm not trying to challenge you here. This is just a question. Do you think that nobody in the Obama nobody in the leadership of the Democratic Party has said, "Wait a second, we can't do this because it's unconstitutional"? You know, the whole.
Stop them from doing the Patriot Act or anything else that we know is unconstitutional. It's just that nobody ever challenges these things, and I think that is a big lawsuit to challenge that whether they have the right to mandate you to buy a product. Why not have to mandate people to buy vacations in Las Vegas? You know.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I agree. I mean, I don't disagree with this at all, what you're saying at all. And I hope somebody does challenge it. And you know what, Doug? I'll bet somebody will. I bet there will be a case filed as soon as this becomes law to declare it unconstitutional. Doug, thanks, man. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. Take care. Mike is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Michael. I just turned my radio down.
Good.
Glad to get a hold of you. I am calling back to your comment about John Conyers.
Uh-huh.
I think the quote was, they said Obama was getting bad advice from clowns on Afghanistan. This is from the Common Dreams article. You know who the clowns are, don't you?
Well, Rahm Emanuel is...
It's FBI.
Who?
FBI. Crystal and Kagan. Remember, they after they folded the folded the website. Everybody wondered, oh, that's it. You know, the neocons are dead. No, they're not dead.
Oh,
they
that group, yeah.
Under a different thing. They call it the Foreign Policy Initiative. You missed this. This was came out over the weekend on Saturday, 12-5. It was on also on Common Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
The headline is Neocons Get Warm and Fuzzy Over War President.
Yeah, I did miss that.
Yeah. This is, let's see, they're christening Obama the new war president.
Yeah?
Yeah, okay. The core leadership of FBI has waged their campaign in countless editorials and columns published in the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and the Weekly Standard. Oh, Project for a New American Century, that's what I was trying to say before.
Right, PNAC.
So it's the same PNACers, and now they call themselves the Foreign Policy Initiative.
Yeah. All right, now that you're being very slow and speaking in short sentences, I understand, I'm familiar with what you're talking about. Yes, absolutely. I did not read what you're referring to over this past weekend, but I damn sure will track it down now. Does it piss you off?
Well, yeah, you know, kind of. But, I mean, I never really believed, you know, that, you know, the neocons are gone. This is the end of the neocons.
Right.
You gotta be kidding me, man.
Right, right.
You know. Yeah, I don't need any swamp land. Thanks a lot. You know?
I got you loud and clear. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate your comments. Yeah, and I got an email from somebody who said, "Look, there's some things about John Conyers that he was involved in democratic socialism and this conference and that conference back in the '90s. So I may have John Conyers pegged completely wrong in my interpretation of who he is politically." He may definitely be a democratic socialist who still operates within the Democratic Party. So if I need to do further research before I shoot off my mouth where it concerns Conyers, I think I probably should. I'm so down on the Democratic Party right now that I don't, other than Kucinich and a couple other people, I just don't see anybody in that party who amounts to, a good nose blow. If my interpretation of Conyers is wrong, then I, accept that and we'll find, I will tell my research department to get off its ass and start providing me with good information. Wait a second. I am the research department. Oh, well, it just goes like that, doesn't it? All right. We have a break here. When we come back, more of your phone calls tonight. All right. Isn't this fun? Talk radio like normal people do it. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour here on the Molloy program. Back to your phone calls in just a second. Email here from Warren in Virginia, who says there's another, or asks a question, is there another housing bubble coming? He writes, Mike, here's a subject I just heard about on NPR radio that might make a good discussion item. Well, I'm afraid to discuss it, Warren. Anyway, he writes, because of inaction on the part of Congress and the fact that we were fooled into voting a liberal Republican in as president, we are about to have a second great crisis, the foreclosure time bomb. We have not even reached the midpoint of the projected total number of foreclosures. The subprime loan ripoff problem has not been fixed by the government, nor have the millions of Americans who have or will be foreclosed on been given any time or a break on their underwater house loans. This is because the banking industry has not been forced by Obama or the Congress to really address the problem and take action. Hence, housing prices have not even come close to bottoming out. This will lead to further bank failures, which will result in another credit crunch, another market crash, and even more unemployment. How long will it take and what will it take to get these fascists who run our government to realize people are about ready to take to the streets? Sincerely, Warren, I know that there are more foreclosures coming. There were a lot of you know, five-year loans that were written in, you know, 76 and 77 and 78. Well, 70, 76 and 77 anyway, with these huge balloon notes, the interest-only notes, this and that, and yeah. I don't know where it's going to end. All I know is the people responsible for doing this are just are continuing to churn the stock market and the bond market and this market and that market, and they're screwing around with the dollar, and the madness goes on. The ultra wealthy in this country who understand how to do this stuff with the derivatives and the this and the and I don't even know what the terms are. They're making billions once again. They're just stealing. I don't know. You know, in most countries, when you finally have a revolution where the disparity of income between the top and the bottom gets so huge, and you finally have that kind of revolution, usually heads roll, literally. You know, people get shot, people get put up against the wall, people get decapitated, people face the guillotine, people this, people that. So I don't know how much longer this is going to go on. Oh my God, I really don't. I've got something here, if I can find it in this damn stack of items that I want to get to. Oh, here it is. When I saw it, this comes from Bloomberg.com. I don't know what to make of this. Goldman Sachs, well, the writer of this, Alice Schroeder, she writes, I just wrote my first reference for a gun permit, said a friend who told me of swearing to the good character of a Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated banker who applied to the local police for a permit to buy a pistol. The banker had told this friend of mine that senior Goldman Sachs people have loaded up on firearms and are now equipped to defend themselves if there is a populist uprising against the bank. This is a Bloomberg. So the writer says, I call Goldman Sachs spokesman Lucas Van Praag to ask whether it's true that Goldman partners feel they need handguns to protect themselves from the angry proletariat. He didn't call me back. The New York Police Department has told me that, quote, as a preliminary matter, end quote, I believe some of the bankers I inquired about do have permits. The NYPD also said it would be a while before it can name names. I don't know what to make of this story. But according to the writer, and she's getting it secondhand, you know, who knows? The executives at Goldman, if we want to play this out, you know, I'll take it third hand, fourth hand, fifth hand, I'll make stuff up. Here we go. You ready to make stuff up? Goldman Sachs management has told its people, you better arm yourself because we are stealing so much. And we are ripping off so many people, and we are causing such monumental grief. This makes the SNL scandal, where the thieves, including one of the Bush brothers, just made billions, and the American public, we're still paying for it. We're still paying for the SNL crisis of the 80s. We're still paying for it, and we'll continue to pay. Well, forget that. But this thing that Goldman Sachs and the rest of these predatory bastards have done, it makes the SNL scandal of the 80s look like, I don't know, the preliminary bout, you know, the three-rounder, you know, the one before the headliners come on. Here we are, Goldman Sachs. What did I read the other day? They have allocated, was it $12.5 billion for bonuses? They have over 1,000 employees who are going to get at least $1 million bonus for doing what? Somebody tell me what Goldman Sachs does to better this economy. What do they make? Are they making sure that small businesses get money? No. Are they making sure that retirees' stock portfolios are in good shape? No. What do they do? Are they assisting home building associations? No. What are they doing? What does a company like Goldman Sachs do? You know, except just jiggle things around and move stuff. And I realize I'm talking here on the kindergarten level, but that's the level on which I understand the stuff. They're doing nothing. They're stealing. They're just stealing. And you can make the argument, okay, but calm down, Malloy. The stuff they're stealing is just paper. It's not real money anyway. Okay, that may be true, but as long as 99% of this society agrees that it is real money, you know, when they get on a jet or buy a jet and take off for Cannes or wherever they go to spend the winter, that's real. Goldman Sachs executives being told to arm themselves. I'm going to have to get one of those bigger clips. I think the one I have only holds like 16 rounds. I'm going to have to get one of those banana handle things. Oh, God. All right. Back to the real world here. Tim is in Little Rock, Arkansas, listening on XM. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Moving right along, sort of.
Hey, man, I'm just so tired of hearing the politicians. Like, Obama, we voted for him, but the next thing you hear is all this talk about protecting people that make up to $250,000 a year and stuff. Or $200,000 per person in a married couple. That's, you know, I just don't think that's right.
What do you think it should be?
Well, I mean, we've got people out here that need stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, what on earth do you need with more than $36,000 a year?
Mm-hmm.
That's $3,000 a month.
Right.
I work hard. I don't make that.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think these people, I mean, I don't understand why they're allowed to make it, but why is Obama talking about protecting people that make up to $200,000? That's just too much for anybody.
Are you sure he's saying that? You're talking about increases in taxes to pay for health care and stuff like that, right? Is that what you're referring to?
Right.
Yeah.
So we're all talking about this. You know, we got people that.
Well,
we got people that can't have a good place to live. We got, and all this stuff. And you got someone that makes $120,000 a year. That's $10,000 a month. You don't need that.
Hey, hold on a second. I got to do a break here, Tim. Remember where we are in this conversation. Hold on, and we'll pick it up when we come back. Quick break. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Rich man.
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, we're talking with Tim in Little Rock. All right, you're suggesting then that there should be an upward limit as to what people are paid in this country.
Well, right, Mike. I mean, I drive around out here, and it's just like you see, as long as there's anybody that doesn't have a living wage and have, you know, nice things for their family and stuff. Uh-huh. And then you think about someone making 10 or 12. I mean, the upper limits of what the politicians are talking about is $20,000 a month before they're even hit with taxes. And even after that, it just goes up from there. It's ridiculous.
Well, before they're asked to pay a tax surcharge for health care, of course, people who earn up to $250,000, up to any amount, are supposed to pay taxes. I realize a lot of wealthy people avoid it altogether and leave it to working people like me, like you, like whoever, to run the country with our money. And we don't have enough money. That's why we are 11, 12, 15, I don't know what the number is anymore, $1 trillion in debt. So it is, you know, it's a shell game. It's ridiculous. I get your point.
I just mean the whole thing all together, Mike. I mean, not just a little surcharge to pay so that, you know, for our doctors. I mean, what do people need all that money for? That's just way too much for any one person.
Well, I agree with that, but what do you do to stop it?
Well, it should just, over 36,000, let's just say over 50, 60,000 a year, how much more do you need? Why not just tax it?
Well, I don't have any problem with that, Tim. Back during the Eisenhower years, I think when Kennedy lowered the upper tax limit, wasn't it in, I'm sure somebody will let me know here, wasn't it the upper tax limit for the ultra wealthy 70, 80, 85%? It was almost confiscatory where everything was taken. You know, I don't know. But what I do know is we live in a society where, starting with our kids when they're still in the crib, excuse me, as a culture, we beat into their heads this so-called consumerism, which is not consumer. We don't consume things. We use them until we break them, and then we go buy new. if you want to change what you're talking about, then it seems to me that the entire society has to be changed, which I'm all in favor of, a more equitable distribution of resources, not just money, but, oh, hell, I don't know. Tim, you're making my head hurt. I understand what you're saying. I have no answers. Tim, I'm as lost as you are. All right, just wandering around bumping into stuff. That's all I'm doing. Tim, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. It'll never happen in this society, in this culture, because everybody in America, immigrant, native-born, legal, undocumented, it doesn't make any difference. We're all told the same lie, you know. Hey, psst, come here. You too can be a zillionaire. I can? Oh, yeah. You mean through the lottery? No. Just continue to vote in a way that allows those of us who are zillionaires to continue to be zillionaires, and maybe someday you can. You know, which is a lie. You know, it's an absolute lie. 99.9% of us, literally, 99.9% of us, we're not going to reach that point. Come on. Come on. And any fool who spends their whole life trying to get there is that, a fool. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy. Just absolutely crazy.
You know, to think that we've come to a point, this sounds like more of a Tom Hartman topic, that we've come to a point in this culture slash society where, and we didn't get here last week or last month. We've been here for a long time. You know, what you got determines who you are. And if you want to be more, you got to get more. Right? And we're not talking about getting more decency or honesty or justice or clear thinking or read more books. You know, we're talking about getting more stuff. I don't know what to do, Tim. I really don't. I really don't. So, let's take a break. We'll come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
C-SPAN, so you don't have to. It's more Mike Molloy.
25 before the hour, I got a couple of emails here about the tax rate. Kathy in Green Bay writes, Kennedy proposed, but Johnson actually got it passed. Individual tax rates reduced the individual tax rate. The top rate dropped from 91% to 70%. P.S. When the tax rates were so high, Kathy writes, people would reinvest in their companies instead of taking more income. Well, those days are certainly gone, right? Mike is in Chicago. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How's everything going?
Pretty good. How about you? It's colder than hell out there tonight, isn't it?
Oh, it's dropping down to 10, 15 below wind chill, so everything's black ice right now.
Oh, you've been there, done that.
Got
the T-shirt.
I just wanted to let you know, I just saw Bill Press and Stephanie over the weekend. They came out and did an appearance, and I was asking Bill Press this. What happens if no public option comes through? And to Bill Press, it didn't even enter the realm of feasibility because he said it would be political suicide between him sending 30,000 troops and then this. He said there's no way that they would be able to survive. So he said, so I don't even enter that into the equation. Hmm. And now look, 3 days later, 4 days later, what's happening?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, it's such a shame to me how this party has just been bought and sold, and Obama has just been so spineless about everything. He's been as quiet as a church mouse.
Yeah, that's the part I can't get. You know, I entertain the ideas a lot of people do that he's afraid because he's the first black president, and there are millions of crazy people in this country who are inspired every day by Glenn Beck to commit presidenticide. On the other hand, Barack Obama understood full well when he ran for president, if he got it, he'd have to face this. So, I don't understand either his seeming fearfulness. I don't want to say cowardice. I reserve that for Republicans, but his seeming fearfulness to, if nothing else, drag in the leaders of his own party, whether they're blue dog or red dog or I don't care what they are, and just say, look, do this. God damn it, do it. Or I will guarantee you that come re-election time, you will not get a dime. And we will quietly back your opponent in a primary. I don't know why they don't play hardball. I mentioned this.
You know what it is? It's the whole confrontation thing. And to me, it began with Sarah Palin saying that he's palling around with terrorists. He should have came out and said, look, my daughters hear this in the media, and their father is known as palling around terrorists because of these lies you're starting. And he should have came out and said something. And right there when he didn't, I knew, I said, oh, it's going to take him a long time to grow a spine.
Yeah,
and it's a shame what it's turned into. And all this time, you know, we could have been overturning Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We could have been measuring window treatments for Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld in The Hague. And we've been doing none of this because for the last 4 months we're concentrating on this. And look where it got us.
Yeah, well, another dead end, I guess, another brick wall.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Back up a second. Stephanie and Bill were in Chicago. Where in the hell was I? My invitation didn't come?
You know what? As a matter of fact, I asked Stephanie where you were and where the MOOCs were. She didn't bring out the MOOCs, and she said they didn't travel well. And she said it was just scheduled, just them two. She didn't have anything to do with it. But I did bring up your name. I said, where's Mike? You guys should have made it the trifecta.
Well, I know what it is now. The station that carries them in Chicago will not carry my program.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is amazing to me. I don't know why we're not back on WLS. You know, I could help save WLS's ass. It's going right down the toilet, I understand.
Well, have you heard the program lineup on WLS?
It's
got Mark Levin, it's got Sean Hannity, it's got Rush Limbaugh. It's completely gone. I'm like, what happened to Stephen Gary? You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it just shows you, you know, and supposedly the liberal media, that's a perfect example of it, right?
Well, that's very true. It's a shame what happened to WLS, but no, WCPT in Chicago just simply won't carry my program, and I don't get it. I don't understand why. Maybe it's because I have a potty mouth. I have no idea. Hey,
that's
Mike.
That's why I listen to you, though.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, Mike, take care.
All right, you too. I got an email from somebody who said, where's Stephanie? Well, that's where Stephanie was. Wait till I see her in Minneapolis on, when is that? The 25th? 23rd of January? Am I supposed to say that yet? I don't know if the station's made an announcement yet or not, but the one in Minneapolis. What the hell is it? KTNF, yeah. Jason's driving in Jackson, Mississippi, listening on XM. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
I'm all right.
I was calling basically, I've born and raised in Texas. The only talk shows I've ever heard have all been conservative. I just got XM because I just bought a new truck. I like what I hear. It's totally the opposite of what I'm used to hearing because I've always listened to Glenn Beck and Mark Levin and Rush and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, which I actually had a different idea. Whenever I was flipping through here and it said America left, I was like, oh, I've got to hear this. You know, they're going to, you know, think everything Obama does is great. And I've actually heard in the past 2 days different than what I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of a breath of fresh air, you know, so I've probably been misinformed about a lot of stuff.
Well, that's very true. I've worked at radio stations where, not like you're listening on XM. We get carried on radio stations, too. But I've worked at radio stations. I was just talking to that guy from Chicago. I used to work at WLS in Chicago that it had Rush in the morning, had Hannity at some point in the afternoon. I was on in the evening. And we used to have just an enormous audience. I mean, in Chicago, for God's sake. I don't know why they program just one kind of talk radio in so many of these markets. But one thing that the so-called conservatives, and I don't call them conservatives, hell, I got conservatives in my family, and they think people like Beck and Levin and the rest of these people are just droolingly insane.
Yeah.
They're not really conservatives at all. They're fascists. But so many people that listen only to right-wing talk get a complete misunderstanding of what liberals, the few of us that are left, or progressives, what we're about.
I've been getting the past couple of days actually listening. I mean, there's substance to what is in the radio shows, which I can't tell you a whole lot of the shows I've been listening to because I don't know everybody's names. I mean,
right.
I can't even tell you what most of the people's names are because I've heard it before, you know. But I do want to say that, you know, it's nice to hear it, you know. But I wouldn't say that I'm a conservative. You know, I'm not a race hater or whatever liberals think conservative.
Well, I don't think that.
You know, that's not me. You know, I'm not against gay marriage. I think everybody should be able to be miserable in their life. You know, that's great. But there's one thing listening to that guy a while ago saying nobody should make over $36,000 a year.
Well, I think what he was doing was questioning at a time when the country is so deeply in debt, when the only people making these millions and millions of dollars, they're not working people. I don't know what you do for a living, but I have a feeling that you probably are working class. You said you got a new truck. You're never going to make millions of dollars. I'm never going to make millions of dollars. And what that caller was talking about was so many people in this society who make those big amounts of money. What the hell are they contributing? What are they doing? And I'm not talking about the media people. I understand there's a lot of people in media, Limbaugh, Hannity, Beck, even when you go to people like Charles Gibson on ABC or Brian Williams on NBC. Yeah, they're up in the multi-million dollar range, all of them. But what are they doing? What are they making? What are they producing? The ones I'm talking about, and I think my caller was talking about, are the people who work in this phony mortgage industry, the Wall Street bankers, who are not doing anything, not producing anything. They're just churning up the stock market. They steal their profits. They're stealing from people like you and me. They are literally, they might as well be holding a gun on you.
Oh, yeah, I understand it.
And that's what his point was. His point was simply, why, at a time when there is so much grief in this country, you know, real unemployment up around 17, 18, 19%, people really hurting, people losing their homes, people don't know what the hell they're going to do, just to make ends meet. Forget about having the kids in college. Forget about, having a nice Christmas for your children. What the hell are people going to do to make ends meet? In the meantime, you got this whole 1%. Of people who are just laughing their asses off at workers, just laughing at us, and and they continue to steal as much as they can. That's who he was talking about, because you and I are never going to be up there, never.
Well, I work for a family business. My grandfather started the company that I worked for in the early 60s, and it's a big money maker, which I'm not saying I'm big money. I work 60, 70, 80 hours a week. I've been at work since 6:30 this morning, and I'm still going now.
Good Lord.
But, I don't want people out there to think that people that do have money are all wrong. You know, we have apartment complexes where nobody that lives there is high income. You know, we have everything set up through HUD and stuff like that, to make sure people have a place to live.
Well, Jason, listen, we just about here have to take a break. Listen, I really appreciate you calling. All I would ask is you just continue to listen. You're going to hear stuff from so-called liberal talk radio that you probably won't agree with. But I honestly believe this. I honestly believe this, that you will get more of a realistic set of information or things to think about in listening to so-called liberal talk than you will from so-called conservative talk. I really mean that. Now, I may be biased about that, obviously, but just keep going. I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing. I appreciate it. I'm glad you found this program. I'm on every night, Monday through Friday, so tune in once in a while, pal. Thanks, Jason. I got to leave it there, man. We'll be right back.
What could I do? Remember the unity. Everything leaves me cold.
It is 10 before the hour. I think I ought to mention our contributors tonight. I stop doing that every night. Sharon Gordy is our military affairs correspondent. Bruce Enberg, economic affairs. Kay Petrini, education. Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, ethics advisors of the program. And Kathy Bay, who is the executive producer and engineer. Ron is in Raleigh, North Carolina, listening online. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Brother Mike. Happy solstice to you.
Thank you. Back at you.
I've been listening, and people have been talking about this mandated health insurance and
right.
car insurance as being the same thing. It's a false construct. See, driving is a privilege, and you can't drive on the streets of any state without, you know, a driver's license, which the state grants to you. It's a privilege. Living, when last I heard, was a right, and that's the big difference. And the only way to opt out of living is to kill yourself or have somebody do it for you. And so those two are not the same thing, and I think somebody could challenge this mandated health insurance under the Commerce Clause. I'm not a constitutional scholar, but this is the only time that the federal government is going to be able to put the strong arm on people to buy private products.
Well, let me ask you the same thing I asked the last guy who brought this up. If that's true, and as you say, you're not a constitutional scholar, neither am I. If that's true, then why hasn't some genius who is advising members of Congress, Democratic members of Congress, how to write this law, why haven't they said, whoops, wait a second, no, sorry, we can't do it, because it's unconstitutional?
I'm getting the feeling they're going, ixnay on the problem, eh, you know? It's like, don't say anything, maybe nobody will notice. But I get the feeling that there are people that are looking to challenge this thing in the court. I'm just thinking that the people that want to do it right now aren't up for, you know, saying, well, it may be a constitutional problem, because you know how many constitutional problems there are right now.
Oh, yeah. We've got a whole list of them.
I mean, nobody's challenging those because nobody seems to have the wherewithal, the money, the time, or whatever. I've been trying to find out how many lawyers we have in our, you know, antitrust division and the Justice Department, and what are we paying them for?
You're right.
You know? I mean, no, we don't seem to say, you know, Comcast, NBC, that seems like a trust problem. They just saying, well, let it go.
Well, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah,
but
it does.
I you know, the rules have all changed in the first place, and you know, if you listen to Tom Hartman, he gets all heady into this stuff. He can handle this a lot better than I can. But you know, we don't live under the Constitution as originally written, and to a certain degree, that's a good thing.
Well, I'm a black guy, so you know.
There you go. I mean, you'll agree with that, as are most women.
Absolutely.
So there have been changes. But as far as the basic protections that the Constitution offered, those have been gutted.
Absolutely.
The 10 that make up the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, and some subsequent to that, those have just been utterly and absolutely trampled on. And I don't want to, you know, piss off any conservative listeners who might be thinking about switching, but most of that stomping has been done by Republicans.
Absolutely.
by conservatives.
About the Second Amendment, and not all of it.
Well, there you go. So, I would imagine that somebody is already working to file the first lawsuit in a federal court someplace to challenge the constitutionality, like you say.
Absolutely. The only other way that car insurance and health insurance would be the same thing is to say, look, you've got to buy car insurance even if you don't have a car.
Well, that's true.
And by the way, as far as Barack Obama's concerned,
yeah,
I would be wearing Kevlar underwear if I were him. So, you know, I can understand why he's a little shaky on stuff.
Well, yeah, but
he
like,
wasn't my first choice anyway. I'm a black guy, but he wasn't my first
choice. Well, that's, you know, I realize why you felt you had to say that, but, you know, you don't have to, not on this program.
Oh, I know, but, you know, people think when I say that, they go, oh, that's weird. I said no, but.
Yeah,
you know,
I know. It's the old race issue. But here's what I was saying earlier on a different caller, or maybe not to a caller. Obama is not stupid. He knew what he was doing. He knew that he was challenging 232 years of racism by saying, I think I want to be the president of the United States. Ow!
So it's the perfect time for it, because I wasn't going to vote for the fool on the Hill.
Right. But yeah. since he knew what he was doing, I don't see why now anybody can pin on him, like I'm inclined to do now. I don't see how anyone can pin on him the he's afraid label.
Yeah.
Because he knew what he was getting into. He knew what he was going to have to deal with.
Absolutely.
He knew that the big power brokers up there, when the Democrats are not in power, when the Republicans are in power, they are white Southern men. Who will not hesitate to make him look bad, to remove him from office, to find something on him. Now, the Republicans happen not to be in power now, and President Obama better hope that during the 8 years, last 8 years that he's president, he better hope that the Republicans never get control of the House and or the Senate. They will make his life more miserable than, and I'm being serious here, than any slave owner ever did back in Mississippi in 1845. You know what I'm saying there.
Let me ask you a question, Mike.
Yeah.
Do you think that you know, sometimes I get these weird thoughts in my head. Maybe we should have let McCain have this.
Well, hell yeah. I said that back during when the campaign was just getting going with it, when there were still 8 Democrats and 8 Republicans. I said, wait a second. Let McCain have it. And oh man, did Democrats and progressives and liberals just bust me a new body orifice with emails and phone calls. You know, what are you talking about, Malloy? And I said, well, things are so screwed up. They can only get worse. Why have a Democrat, any Democrat, as president when this train wreck occurs?
Like Jimmy Carter with 16 years of Republicans, Jimmy Carter comes in and it's all his fault.
Right. Well, and Obama is handling things that Carter couldn't even imagine.
Absolutely.
He couldn't even imagine. 2 wars, an economy that's tanking, a national debt that, you know, China owns our ass. They just haven't come to collect yet.
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Listen, Ron, thanks, man. We're out of time. Appreciate it. Take care, okay?
I'm in North Carolina, Mike.
I lived there twice, pal. I lived in Raleigh 2 times, went to NC State. Been there, done that, got that t-shirt too.
Come on back though.
All right, Ron.
All right, take care.
No, I didn't graduate. All right, that's it for tonight. Thanks for hanging out. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Of all the things that